You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
What is it with conservatives who don't want to pay taxes? I don't mean con men. Of course, con men don't want to pay their taxes. Of course, Donald Trump, con man, didn't pay his taxes and got away with not paying his taxes for years, according to a blockbuster report in Monday's New York Times. The Times somehow got its hands on 2 decades worth of, quote, tax return data. So not Trump's tax returns, not the tax returns he promised to release in 2015, like all other presidential candidates have done for decades – and then never did release, but reams and reams of data, 2 decades worth of Trump's tax filings and the filings of the hundreds of companies that make up his quote-unquote business organization. The scams, the dodges, the shell companies, the felonies, it's all there in the New York Times. And the incompetence. Donald Trump has inherited and lost billions of dollars and borrowed and lost billions of dollars and is right now more than $1 billion in debt. To who? We don't know. The president of the United States is a crook and a bad one, and his kids are crooks too. In a debate in 2016 with Hillary Clinton, remember her? She's the person who could have been president and wouldn't have appointed 3 anti-choice judges to the Supreme Court if it weren't for the Electoral College and all those third-party tantrum throwers. Hillary Clinton, who, when she tried to warn us about Trump appointing 3 and possibly 4 justices to the Supreme Court, was accused of scaremongering and told to shut up. Remember her? Can we be scared now? Anyway, in 2016, Hillary Clinton accused Donald Trump of not having paid federal income taxes. "Of course I don't pay taxes," Trump shot back, "because," and I'm quoting, "I'm smart." A man who wants to nuke hurricanes is a lot of things, including dangerous if he has the ability to nuke hurricanes, but he's not smart. Trump paid smart people to hide his incompetence, to hide his money, to cook his books, and lie to the IRS. And it turns out Clinton was wrong. Donald Trump did pay federal income taxes in 2016, $750. He paid the same amount in 2017. But our billionaire, supposedly billionaire president, did not pay a penny in federal taxes for 10 of the 15 years before that. $750. The average registered nurse, as the Biden campaign quickly pointed out yesterday, pays $10,000 a year in federal income taxes on average. All right, so Trump is a crook, and now we have proof, and it's not going to make any difference to his supporters. They know he's a liar and a con artist, and they don't care. And I get it. His lies drive the libs crazy, and that's all they care about, owning the libs. But here's what I don't get. Conservatives are the patriots, supposedly. They go on and on about how much they love this country, but they don't want to pay for it. They love the military, but they don't want to pay for it. All those cool weapons systems, taking care of the troops, don't want to pay for it. They love roads. Couldn't live out there in the exurbs and those blood-red, wide-open rural areas without those roads, but they don't want to pay for them. They love cops, particularly cops who brutalize black people. But they don't want to pay for them. They love firemen, but they don't want to pay for them. They love sitting in red states that are subsidized by taxpayers in blue states, but they don't want to pay for them. Oh, and do they ever love Mount Rushmore, as we so recently saw? They love Mount Rushmore so much they'll risk dying in a pandemic to go sit in front of it while Trump runs his lying mouth in front of them. But they don't want to pay for the National Park Service that maintains it. Joe Biden got a ton of grief in 2008 when he said paying your taxes, paying your fair share, was patriotic. He was right then and he's right now. And here's hoping Biden throws it in Trump's face tonight during their first presidential debate. You know, it occurs to me that I've never played any tape or clips of Joe Biden speaking on my podcast, so many of Donald fucking Trump. So I'm going to play one now. This is Joe Biden reemphasizing his point that paying your taxes is patriotic, in an interview on CNN about Donald Trump not paying his taxes in 2016.
"Since when does somebody who lives at the top of the world in a penthouse overlooking the world be in a position where he doesn't feel any obligation at all to pay any federal income tax, to support the military, to support education, to support our foreign policy. Since when is that a patriotic thing to do? Can you imagine any other president's existed to ever say that and be proud of that?
Back to my point. Conservatives insist they love the country more than anybody else, more than the libs. And they hate paying taxes, and they admire a man who broke laws to avoid paying his. I'm sorry, but you cannot claim to love your country. You shouldn't be allowed to claim you love your country if you're not willing to pay your taxes. Just like you can't claim to love your kids more than your ex-wife while refusing to pay your child support. If you won't pay your child support, you really gotta shut up about how much you love your kids, because it's a lie. And if you won't pay your taxes, you know, you really gotta shut the fuck up about how much you love your country, because that's a lie too. All right, coming up on the Magnum, Savage Lovecast, that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com. Twice as much show, more guests, more calls, more questions, more answers, no ads. Tristan Taormino, friend of the show, is back to talk with us about, I hope you're sitting down, anal prolapse. That's on the Magnum and in the Micro. Tons of your questions, lots of my answers, and also ads coming up on today's show. Have you heard about Eva? It's a vibrator for couples. It provides hands-free clitoral stimulation in a small, powerful package. And it's made by Dame Products, a woman-founded company making the world a better place, one vulva at a time. Visit dameproducts.com/savage to learn more. This episode is brought to you by Allform, premium customizable sofas and chairs shipped right to your door. For 20% off your perfect sofa, go to allform.com/savage. MeUndies makes feel-good underpants your butt will be proud to wear and you will be proud to be seen in. They will be the most comfortable pair of underwear you will ever own. And to check it out yourself, go to MeUndies.com/savage.
Hey, Dan, 29-year-old, cis, bi female from Florida. I'm calling because my mother is coming to visit me next week. She lives across the state, and I came out to her as bi about a year ago, and she is a devout Catholic. The initial feedback I got from her when I came out was surprise. I remember listening to an episode of yours where you mentioned that if the initial reaction from a family member isn't complete disgust, that's the worst it's going to be, and you're on your way up from there, hopefully. My mother is still in my life. We talk regularly. However, I can't help the feeling of still being judged by her. I feel like I can't talk about my dating life. I feel like I can't talk about LGBT issues without a certain degree of scorn from her. Thus, I have been bringing this up frequently in therapy. I go weekly, and I have a plan to ask my mother how she's currently feeling about our current relationship at this point in time. I am not sure how to phrase these questions and this discussion. I'm looking for some tips and looking to help my mother feel comfortable with the person that I truly am at this point. I'm out with everyone else in my life, except my extended family. They are also very Catholic, very Trumpy people. And so just looking for some direction there.
Your mom is a devout Catholic. So was mine. What a crazy coincidence. Mine was a devout Catholic as well. And I came out to her in the very early 80s, and she got over it and got over it relatively quickly, kind of an accelerated timetable for that era, so many decades ago. But she got over it. But she got over it because I insisted, because I forced the conversation. You know, when I first came out to my mother, she told me that she never wanted to meet a boyfriend. I was not allowed to have boyfriends in the house. And that bothered me. And that seemed unfair because my sister could have her boyfriend over and I couldn't have my boyfriend over. And this went on for a while, even after, you know, the first shock of me coming out and my mother, you know, telling me she still loved me and, you know, but she needed some time to adjust. But it went on, and eventually I had to have a conversation with my mother where I was just like, why is it not a problem that Laura's boyfriend is here? And it would be a problem if my boyfriend were to be here, to be in the house, in the family home. And the issue was sex and how uncomfortable she was with me giving blowjobs or having sex with men. And I, you know, we had this conversation a block from our house on the Metra rail platform when she was going to work. I remember it vividly, where I just said to her, you know, Laura gives her boyfriend blowjobs. I know it. You know it. How come when Laura's boyfriend is over, you don't think about those blowjobs or see those blowjobs? But the idea of me having a boyfriend over, all you can see is me sucking his dick. What is up with that? My mom narrowed her eyes. She looked at me and she said, the blowjobs Laura gives to her boyfriend could lead to marriage and family and children, and the blowjobs you give your boyfriend can never go anywhere, go nowhere. And I said to her, whose fault is that? Whose fault is it that gay people can't marry or have children? It's not our fault. It's your fault. It's the fault of straight people that we, at least then, at least in the West, lived such circumscribed lives. And that confrontation helped my mother push past her discomfort with guys that I might be giving blowjobs to or getting blowjobs from coming to the house, being in the house. She came around on that issue because I forced that conversation. You came out to your mother, and it doesn't sound like you've done the work of having those difficult conversations. It sounds like you've sidestepped them. It's not that your mother has expressed rabidly biphobic or homophobic views to you. You just sense discomfort when the topic comes up. And you talk about this, perhaps at great length, with your therapist. You need to risk having these conversations with your mother about her discomfort. You need to address it head on. And if I could do it as a gay teenager in Chicago in the early 1980s, you can do it as an adult bi woman with a devout Catholic mother, just as I had a devout Catholic mother now in 2020. And just go to your mom and say, ever since I came out to you, it feels like it's an issue between us. Maybe I'm projecting. Maybe you're just picking up on my, you know, discomfort at the thought that you might be discomforted, that this might be an awkward conversation with you. And if that's what's going on here, we just need to like link arms and leap past it together. But if there's some discomfort, if there's things you need to talk about or process, we can talk about them. We can process them together. I will hear you out and I will not hold a grudge. If there's something you need to say that then I can push back against, as I push back against my mother. And I do think that's an important part of the coming out process, is giving your parents permission and time and loving them, you know, setting the example, loving them unconditionally the way you would like them to love you. I didn't stop loving my mother when she was being unfair to me. We loved each other through that process, through that growth. The growth was only possible because we still loved each other actively. So say to your mother, you can say anything. Don't self-censor, and I won't blow up at you. And we may disagree, and you know, I may point out some flaws in your logic. You may end up saying to your mother something very similar to what I said to my mother. Whose fault is that? If she has some issues about bi people and the way bi people live in this world, bi people didn't create the world, just as gay people didn't write the rules that we were forced to live under. Back when I had that confrontation with my mother on the Metra train platform in Chicago when I was a teenager. So talk to your therapist one more time. You've talked to your sex and relationship advice professional now. Talk to your therapist one last time. Steel yourself for this conversation. Stop thinking your mother might be uncomfortable and then letting yourself feel uncomfortable, and ask your mother if she is uncomfortable with your sexuality. And ask her what you can do, what she needs to hear to get comfortable with your sexuality. And recognize it may take some time. The first time my mother met a boyfriend, the first time my mother met some dude who was sodomizing me, it was awkward. And we got through it. You can too.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling about my sister. Me and my sister are 5 years apart, and she's my best friend. My sister is getting married next year. It was pushed back due to COVID. The thing I'm calling about is her relationship with her fiance. My sister met this guy probably about 7 years ago on Tinder, and they started to date. It was always, we always thought it was kind of a weird relationship because it was a lot of texting, not a whole lot of meeting up, so they did meet up. About 3 years in, my sister finds out that he'd been living with his girlfriend. Basically, they broke up for a little bit and then pretty quickly got back together. His other girlfriend left him. It was a big blow up. So basically, after that, everyone in her life was like, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do this. She moved in with him right away, and they've been going now for about 4 years. Basically, a lowdown on him, well, he had this second girlfriend, which was, pretty bad. He doesn't work while she works and pays for everything. He just smokes weed, hangs out with his friends. He drives his car, even though he can't be insured on it. He's rude at family gatherings. Last Christmas, he spent the entire time on the phone at the table. When someone asked him about it, he had a tantrum and stormed out. Basically, he once told me that he always asks my family for expensive gifts because he knows we all have money. There's just, the list could go on and on. My question is, my sister's wedding, I'm the maid of honor. And I, to be honest, at this point, I don't really want to be involved with the wedding. I think she's making the biggest mistake of her life, legally attaching herself to this guy. I don't know if I am just, I should just get over myself, or if it's worth it to tell her that. My sister has suffered from a low self-esteem her entire life. And really, a lot of the times when I try to broach subjects like this, instead of it really like helping and I feel like it being constructive, I feel like it just makes her sad. I don't know if she'll have the courage ever to leave him, no matter how much support she gets from me and some of her good friends who are really good friends to her. I would just like your insight on what you think I should do, if I should keep broaching the subject, even though I think that it really hurts her, or if I should just be supportive, or if there's another way I'm not thinking about that could maybe help her.
I think you can speak your mind. I think you do have a duty to warn here while also still being supportive of your sister. I think the best way to be supportive of your sister is to right now, before she ties herself to this loser legally, going to her, having a little intervention, maybe bringing along a couple of her friends and really telling her how you feel, why this is such a terrible idea, why you think she deserves better than this dude. And then go to the goddamn wedding. If it makes your sister feel better for you to be maid of honor, and if you already agreed to be maid of honor and you've already been fitted for that fucking dress, maybe be maid of honor, be there for her, even if you disapprove of him on that day. And I know I just said to the previous caller that, I'm not a big fan of the idea that people can change. People often stay the same, especially shitty people, when they get their way over and over again. And it sounds like this shitty guy has gotten his way over and over again. They're unlikely to change. Maybe he'll change, but yeah. No, I think kind of like what Michelle Obama said about the presidency, that it doesn't change who you are. It reveals who you are. I think the same is often true of marriage and long-term relationships, that it often reveals who you are. You become more the person that you've already demonstrated yourself to be to others. And this guy has already demonstrated himself to be a very deeply shitty, rude, inconsiderate, lying sack of shit. And you need to say all of those things to your sister. As hard as that may be to say or will be to say, as hard as that definitely will be for her to hear, you need to say it. And then in good conscience, you can go to the fucking wedding. Just make sure as a part of the intervention, you tell your sister that if she decides to marry this guy anyway, she still has your love and support. You're not withdrawing from her. So that if, when the time comes that she realizes she's made a terrible mistake, she knows she can come to you, and you have already promised her, as I've advised other callers, you've promised her that if that day comes and she wants out of this relationship and needs help finding a lawyer and getting a divorce, you will say loving and supportive and constructive and helpful things. You will not say, I told you so. Are you ready for fall? This is going to be one wild ride. Personally, I intend to hunker down with a full embrace of comfort and coziness after I vote and donate and organize. And comfiness for me means me undies on my butt and me undies lounge pants on my legs. Me undies will be playing a key role in my attire and my self-care regimen. Me undies are made from irresistibly soft natural fibers sourced from beechwood trees. Their micromodal fabric is not only super soft, but breathable, light, and impossibly cozy. This is some serious comfort. I am wearing my Me Undies t-shirt right now. They help you feel truly comfortable from head to toe, from outside in. They offer a huge variety of prints, colors, styles, and it is not, again, just underpants. Both my family and Nancy's family love our slippery, slinky lounge pants. And you can also check out their t-shirts, robes, socks, and onesies, for Christ's sake. Adult onesies. So cozy, so comfortable. And you never have to run out of undies again with a Me Undies membership. A subscription that sends new pairs right to your door and also gets you site-wide savings and exclusive sales. Keep your eyes peeled for Me Undies' spooky, cool Halloween prints. And Me Undies has a great offer for my listeners. For any first-time purchasers, you get 15% off and free shipping. This is a no-brainer, especially because they have a 100% satisfaction guarantee. To get your 15% off your first order, to get some comfy lounge pants of your own, free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/Savage. Be sure to use the slash savage. They know you found them through our show. Again, that's MeUndies.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I'm a cisgender bisexual woman living in the Midwest. I'm calling because I had this random stranger start following me on Instagram and liking and commenting on my photos, which is fine. But then when I went to go look at his page, he had a picture of me and Lady Gaga. Like, those were the only two pictures, and it was who wore it better, because I guess we both have blue hair. So I reached out to him, and I was like, hey, do I know you? And he was like, no, I'm just a fan. If that was creepy, like, let me know, and I can take it down. And I was like, yeah, it's a little creepy, but I don't mind, like, having a fan. So he took it down, and he's been really respectful of my boundaries, and we've kept talking back and forth. He has asked me to send him nudes and that he would love to pay me, quote unquote, tons of money for them. I'm not cool with that right now. I sent him to one of my friends who's a sex worker and was like, hey, this is like a girl that has like a similar look and vibe to her if you want to support her. Otherwise, like, I'm not going to give you any personalized content. He did say that he has like screenshot in my Instagram stories of me doing yoga and other stuff that he likes to jerk off to. And he asked if that's okay, which I like that he's asking and respecting my boundaries. I told him that if he wants to jerk off to the content that I normally post on my Instagram, that's fine, but he should pay me. Because I'm not going to just leave money on the table, I guess. So he gave me his PayPal, and I sent a request for $60 just to see like how serious he was, and he paid me it. So now I'm sort of like in trying to figure out like how much is like a reasonable like request to charge someone to jerk off to like your normal Instagram content. I don't know who this guy is. I wish I knew that he was like some really rich lawyer and could charge him like a whole lot more, but he doesn't have Facebook or Instagram or LinkedIn, any sort of thing. And I was even able to like look up his name. There's nothing out there. So if you have any advice, if you think this is sketchy, or I don't know, how much would you charge for someone to jerk off to you?
You have very different boundaries than most people. Most people wouldn't want some stranger, some anonymous stranger on the internet, to ask them if it was okay to jerk off to the pictures that they were sharing on Instagram or WhatsApp or TikTok or wherever. Most people who post thirst traps understand that there will be people out there in the world who whack off looking at those pictures. Even if you're posting things that aren't necessarily thirst traps, you can't control how other people are going to enjoy the content that you float out into the world for free. And the last thing most people would want is to hear from someone asking their permission to jerk off to those pictures. Most people would experience that as kind of a boundary violation, not respect for boundaries. I'm trying to shame you or anything. You know, your boundaries are a little bit different. You appreciate if someone's going to whack off to your Instagram account, that person asking if it's okay with you. But that makes you a little different. I just didn't want anybody else out there listening who might be whacking off to somebody's Instagram account without their permission, without having, you know, asked for their consent, not to rush to their DMs to bother people whose Instagram photos they've been repurposing for masturbatory reasons and ask them for their permission, because most wouldn't react as positively as you did, caller. So what do you charge? He obviously gets off on you knowing that he's jacking off to your pictures, and maybe he's into a little bit of financial domination, and putting a little bit of money into your account enhances the experience for him. So what do you charge? And you're not charging him for bespoke content. You're not creating pictures just for him. He's just suggesting a kind of honor system, tax or tribute, where he pays you when he enjoys your photos. Well, you asked for $60. You got $60. It was a frictionless request. He didn't push back. He didn't say, it seems like a lot of money, but here it is. So obviously $60 wasn't too much for him. I would advise you perhaps to make something of a game of it, where you can find his limit and tell him that, you know, if you want to be playful, if you want to be sexy about it, he might appreciate this. You could tell him that you want an extra $10 or $20, that it was $60 this time. The next time he whacks off looking at your Instagram, you want $80, then you want $100, then $120. That will add up quickly. And at some point, you know, maybe when it hits $500, maybe when it hits $1,000, jacking off to your Instagram account, at least being on the honor system and paying you when he jacks off to your Instagram account, will be too rich for his blood. But the only way to find that ceiling, the only way to find out where his limit is to push at it. You could also ask. He asked you a direct question about whether it was okay to jack off to your photos on Instagram or wherever it is you're posting them. You could ask him what he thinks he should pay you. And you could tell him, when you ask him, that you want it to mean something. You want it to not hurt, but you want him to feel it. And if $60 is nothing for him, well, then he's paying you nothing to jerk off to your photos. If he's a wealthy lawyer, or if he's Jeff Bezos, well, Yahtzee, maybe you'll get a couple of grand each time he jacks off to your photos.
This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Dame Products. Here at the Savage Lovecast, we are utterly convinced that you should be having some really great orgasms. Whether you're giving them to yourself or you're lucky enough to have someone else or others involved, Dame Products can help get you there and improve the quality of the shattering O's that you deserve. So way back in 2014, a two-woman startup broke the internet with Eva, a vibrator for couples that provides hand-free clitoral stimulation. 6 years later, Dame Products is on the front lines of sexual wellness with four vibrators, a sex pillow, all-natural lube, and much more to come. Founded by a sex educator and an engineering whiz, Dame develops bedroom solutions with the help of real humans. They're closing the pleasure gap and helping the world one vulva at a time. Dame offers hassle-free returns within 60 days, so your satisfaction is guaranteed. Get it? Satisfaction. Go to dameproducts.com/lovecast today for $10 off an Eva of your own. That's dameproducts.com/lovecast for $10 off your very own Eva.
Hi, Dan. This is a cisgender woman on the East Coast. I feel like I snooped, but I don't think I was Googling my dad, and I found his YouTube, and he has subscriptions to some videos of women, like, in bathing suits moving around. And I just feel bad because it's easily accessible. So I want to do something because it's on the internet if you Google my dad's name. Please help.
It could be so much worse. Of all the things that your dad could be jacking off to on the internet, finding out that he's jacking off to or enjoying, maybe just enjoying women in bathing suits moving around, you should count your blessings. It'll make the conversation you're going to have with your father a little less awkward than it might be. You know, imagine some of the stuff out there on the internet, a lot of the sex accounts, a lot of the dirty videos rattling around. And just imagine if you had to go to your dad and talk about his vor fetish or his foot fetish, but you just have to go to your dad and talk to him about his standard issue pretty ladies in swimming suits moving around interest, not even a fetish. I wouldn't even call that a fetish. Yeah, lucky you. Count your blessings. Go to your dad. Tell him he probably needs to pull down this account because if somebody Googles him as you did for shits and giggles, you don't even understand why you Googled him or you didn't share with me why you Googled him. They're going to find out that he is a heterosexual man with an interest in scantily clad ladies who are moving around. Not that there's any shame in that, but, you know, could be awkward if he's doing a business deal and somebody wants to do their due diligence and they stumble across this scandalous YouTube account of his. You could have a conversation with him about internet safety, about creating an anonymous account after he yanks down the account that you stumbled over. And at the end of that conversation with your dad, promise him you will never Google him again. Your curiosity, your morbid curiosity about where your father's been going on the internet, hopefully has been satisfied. If you've been listening to the show for a while, you've probably heard me talk about my Helix mattress, which I dearly love and get great sleep and get great other things on. So we were delighted to learn and are delighted to share with you that they make furniture as well. Helix has gone beyond the bedroom and started making sofas. Their company is called Allform, and they're making premium customizable sofas and chairs shipped right to your door. Allform is the easiest way you can customize a sofa using premium materials at a fraction of the cost of traditional stores. You can pick the fabric, and the fabric is, of course, spill stain and scratch resistant. You pick the sofa color, the color of the legs, sofa size, and shape to make sure it's perfect for you and your home. They've got armchairs and love seats all the way up to an 8-seat sectional, so there's something for everyone. And you can always start small and buy more seats later on if you want your Allform sofa to grow and change with you when you move and you grow and you change. Allform sofas are delivered directly to your home with fast, free shipping. In the past, if you wanted to order a sofa online, it could take weeks or even months to arrive, and you would need someone to come and assemble it in your home. Allform takes just 3 to 7 days to arrive in the mail, and you can assemble it yourself in a few minutes. No tools needed. We have an Allform love seat set up right here in the Lovecast studio, set up by Nancy herself. It was a simple task, and it is a cool light blue color. Nancy, again, set it up all by herself without any help from me because I wasn't there the day it arrived. And it was simple and easy and fast, just like me. And if getting a sofa without trying it in the store sounds a little risky, you don't need to worry. You get 100 days to decide if you want to keep it. That's more than 3 months. And if you don't love it, they will pick it up for free and give you a full refund. They also have a forever warranty, literally forever. To find your perfect sofa, check out allform.com/savage. And Allform is offering 20% off all orders for our listeners at allform.com/savage. Be sure to use that slash savage so Allform knows we sent you their way. Again, allform.com/savage for 20% off.
Hi, Dan. So I just listened to your most recent podcast where you mentioned the statistic that roughly half of all marriages stay together even after one of the partners transitioned. And I thought of the very small sample size of the handful of couples that I know that's happened in. And it occurred to me that all of them were either like lesbian couples or heterosexual couples where the man then transitioned to a woman. But I was just curious if how common it is for, like, in traditionally heterosexual couples, if the woman transitions to a man, for them to stay together.
The trans writer, Jennifer Boylan, we met at the Aspen Ideas Festival. It was sort of a glamorous gig for me, perhaps way above my pay grade, my usual station in life. And during our talks, she said that she believed, or she referenced a study that roughly 50% of opposite sex relationships survive after one partner transitions. Most of those marriages, roughly 50%, not most, half, make it through the transition, survive, and the couple stays together. But you're right. Most instances, including Jennifer Boylan's own marriage, most instances where that is cited, most of the examples pointed to are marriages where a male married a female, and then later in life, the male came out as a woman and transitioned, made the transition. And there aren't many examples that I'm aware of where the wife, where the female in the relationship, in an opposite sex relationship, came out as trans, and that marriage survived. In the few instances over the years where I've heard from a man whose wife was transitioning, whose wife came out as a man, they were leaving the relationship. They wanted out of the relationship because they didn't want to be in relationships with guys because they were straight men. And so just going off that – those anecdotes, and anecdotes ain't data, it seems to me that it would be less likely for a relationship to survive a transition if the female in an opposite sex relationship transitioned to male. That may have something to do with and I think, you know, zooming out, we often talk about how female sexuality is more fluid. A lot more women are bisexual. Even a lot of heterosexual identified women are bisexual, even often controversially, because I take the calls. Some lesbian identified women are bisexual. That may contribute to the likelihood that a marriage, an opposite sex marriage, may survive the transition if it is the husband transitioning and not the wife transitioning, because men and male sexuality, men's sexual orientations tend to be a bit more fixed, a bit less fluid. Male bisexuality, while common, isn't as common as female bisexuality. There are roughly, I believe if I remember this correctly, roughly 3 to 4 times as many bisexual women as by men. So maybe just the odds are with the opposite sex couples where the husband transitions, and the odds are not with the opposite sex couple where the wife transitions. If anyone out there listening is aware of any studies or has lived experience in this area, we would love to hear from you.
Hi, Dan. This is a couple calling from Australia. I have a question on behalf of my partner. We were just boning, and I asked him how the state of his butthole is, because it's been like a long-term thing that his butthole is sometimes okay and sometimes not okay. Context, a few years ago, he was in the States and had sex with this guy in the toilets of a nightclub whose name was Sergio, and he bent my partner over and fucked him, and it was fun, I think. And apparently, he's holding his hands to show the girth right now. He describes it as like a Bavarian can cock. I don't know how much lube was used. Anyway, it's still causing problems with his bum sometimes. Sometimes he can put things in there and it's fine. Sometimes it's not. Anyway, we're just wondering what he should do about it, because I've told him he should go to the doctor and he is too embarrassed to get a GP to look at his butthole. But we have a feeling he's got like anal fissures. He doesn't have hemorrhoids. He sometimes has in the past, but not recently. But sometimes it hurts, sometimes it doesn't. He says right now it hurts to wipe and it's like itchy. How do you heal anal fissures, and what should we do about it? Because we want to peg more, but it's not always possible.
I'm wondering if a Bavarian beer can cock differs in a significant way from, say, a Prussian beer can cock, or a Hanoverian beer can cock, or a Silesian beer can cock. Good for you. You guys have a sexually adventurous relationship. I hope the sex that he had with Sergio in the bathroom at the nightclub was safe, even if they weren't using lube. I hope he was using condoms with this near stranger. The solution to your partner being too embarrassed to bring this up with a doctor is for him to go find himself a gay doctor. Find a gay GP, general practitioner. Go find a gay one, because then he can bring up the fact that he got his ass fucked and may have an anal fissure without any embarrassment. That said, people have gotten anal fissures from having one giant, awkward, constipated shit. So you don't have to, if your partner thinks he has a fissure, you don't have to go in there and tell the doctor the whole story about Sergio. If your partner can't be bothered to do the work of finding a gay doctor to go to, he can just go in there and plead giant awkward sideways shit and fissure. But I think he would be better off if he went to see a medical professional who could look at his butt, know what happened to his butt, that he can be open and honest with about the ways in which he experiences anal pleasure and get the treatment that he needs. Anal fissures, they take a while to heal. There's a steroid cream that you apply that helps speed the healing. It is important that your partner get those meds and see a doctor that he can be honest with, or you will never get to peg him as often as you would like or as often as he would like. Go get a gay doctor.
Hi, Dan, Nancy, and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. I'm a mid-40s straight woman and have been in a friends with benefits slash romantic friendship with a man in his early 40s for the past 3 years, of which the last two have been long distance. We visited each other a handful of times, we text almost every day, and occasionally partake in video sex. The last time we FaceTimed, we ended up masturbating together, and while the camera was positioned between my legs, I noticed he took a bunch of screenshots, since FaceTime tells you when someone does this. I was a bit surprised by it, but let it go at the moment. He had to get off the call immediately after we finished, so I didn't get a chance to bring it up right then and there. After thinking about it more, I messaged him the next day to tell him I thought he should have asked me before taking the screenshots and that I felt a little bit violated. Now, I've sent him risque in nude photos in the past, nothing as explicit as the screenshots he took. And all the photos I sent him, I sent of my own free will and because I wanted to. He messaged back that I should have told him at the time I was bothered by him taking those screenshots, that I shouldn't have had the screenshot feature turned on if I didn't want the photos taken, which I didn't even know was a feature of FaceTime, and that I've now made him feel tainted and he no longer wants to continue the sexual aspect of our friendship. Dan, I feel a bit taken aback by him immediately turning to anger and trying to blame me for what I feel is a violation of trust. Am I overreacting to the situation since I didn't mention it right away? Am I being unreasonable and unfair by mentioning it the next day? And should I just chalk it up to being naive and putting myself in that position?
There's no 2-minute statute of limitations when it comes to someone doing something during a sexual encounter that makes you uncomfortable. You aren't obligated to bring it up in that instant or in the next 24 hours. You bring that up when you're ready to bring that up. And sometimes a person has to reflect and think about what happened before they can articulate exactly what it was about it that made them uncomfortable. And so this asshole who has done you the favor of telling you he no longer wants to be sexual with you, which spares you from having to cut him off sexually, this asshole, yeah, he tried to blame you in that moment for his error of judgment or his presumption. You know, if he had responded when you brought this up, if he had said, oh God, I'm so sorry. I thought because you'd sent photos in the past that it wasn't an issue and that you knew that FaceTime had this feature. And so, oh my God, I should have asked. I'm so sorry. I shouldn't have assumed. And I will delete all the photos and I apologize. If that's how he reacted and your sense was it was a sincere reaction and a sincere expression of regret, and he unpacked his error in that moment, again, sincerely, maybe you could have continued on with the sexual relationship. But that he pointed a finger at you, that he blamed you, that he tried to make himself the victim here because you didn't bring it up the moment it happened, because you waited till the next morning to tell him you weren't comfortable with him taking pictures without first asking. And if he had asked, maybe you would have been okay with it. Maybe not. Maybe the camera angle isn't a camera angle that you particularly relish the thought of there being photos out there forever of you taken from that angle. And you would have said no. But, you know, maybe you would have said yes. He's an asshole. He did something in the moment that he knew was wrong, that he knew that you might object to. And for selfish, self-serving reasons, he figured he would rather maybe ask for forgiveness at some point in the future if you objected rather than permission in the moment, because he thought if he asked for permission, the answer might be no. And rather than get that no and not get the photos that he wanted, he just took them. And then when you put him in a position where if he wanted to continue to have access to you in this way, to continue to be sexual with you, he's going to have to apologize. He couldn't apologize. And he blew up at you and got angry at you. Fuck this guy. What an asshole. You did nothing wrong here. I'm glad you objected. I'm glad you said something to him. I'm glad he's fucked the fuck off and removed himself from your life again, sparing you the emotional labor of having to cut him off and dump him yourself, or not dump him. It's a friends with benefits arrangement, having to end the arrangement yourself. You're well rid of this asshole. All right, before we get to your response calls, let's read some of your tweets. Equatorial Kindu tweets. Come on, Dan. Maryland is not a former Confederate state. It was a slave state until 1864 and later a Jim Crow state, but Maryland never seceded and never joined the Confederacy. I stand corrected. While Maryland did not cover itself in glory, slavery, and then Jim Crow, on the subject of slavery, all U.S. states were complicit, all benefited. Still, not only wasn't Maryland a Confederate state, the citizens of Maryland actually voted to end slavery in 1864 in a referendum. That was a year after the Emancipation Proclamation ended slavery in states that were in the Confederacy, but a few months before the 13th Amendment ended slavery in every state. Interestingly, for our times, the vote to end slavery in Maryland was close. It was actually late-arriving absentee ballots that made the difference in Maryland in 1864, and those are the same kind of ballots Trump wants to prevent states from counting in 2020. Doug Threewit tweets, how about blessed wetness instead of vaginal secretions, Dan? Pronounced blessed, not blessed. All right, I've been talking about the lack of a good slang term for vaginal secretions for at least a year now. For seminal fluid, we've got jizz, spunk, spooge, nut, cum, and more. We've got more than 150 slang terms, according to one list I found on the internet. But if you think about what spunk, spooge, jizz, nut, and cum all have in common, Doug Threewit, you'll see why blessed wetness is unlikely to catch on for vaginal secretions. It's not a single syllable word with a couple of fun to mouth consonants and a single vowel. And that ED in blessed lacks the percussive punch of the K in spunk or the Z in spooge. But all that's moot because I think the search for a good slang term for vaginal secretions ended recently, and Cardi B and Megan Thee Stallion, they ended it. WAP. Wet ass pussy. Now, in the song, WAP describes the condition of an aroused woman's genitalia, soaking wet. But just like cum has more than one meaning, it means both climax and ejaculate, and people can climax without ejaculating, obviously. I think WAP can and should be used to describe vaginal secretions, WAP, and the condition, arousal, of those substances being present. If indeed WAP hasn't been adapted already to describe vaginal secretions. So hats off to Cardi B and Megan Thee Stallion for giving us finally the term that we needed, the term we've been begging for years, a one-syllable percussive slang term for vaginal secretions. WAP, WAP, WAP. And finally, C'est la moi vie tweets, perfect birthday present to myself, the Magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast. Aw, thank you for subscribing to the Magnum. C'est la moi vie and happy birthday. Okay, if you want me to read your tweet on an upcoming episode of the Savage Lovecast, be sure to include the hashtag #SavageLovecast. And we really appreciate everybody who posts to social media platforms about the show. Helps get the word out, helps attract new listeners. Thank you. All right, now your response calls.
Hi, Dan. I just wanted to call and thank you so much for recommending the HPV vaccine for men, even men who are married. My husband and I went to our local grocery store today to get our flu shots, and it turns out that most pharmacy grocery stores also carry the HPV vaccine. So we were able to get our flu shots and get him started on the 3-round shots of HPV. So I would have not thought of it if it wasn't for your show.
Hi, Dan. I'm responding to episode 726, specifically to the woman who's sending nude pics of herself to her ex. I have no judgment to this woman. I understand that she didn't know that he was married when this relationship began, the photo exchange. But as far as moving forward goes, I was surprised, Dan, that you seemed to think that there was nothing wrong with this. For me, if my partner was secretly pursuing new and inspired in the current moment naked photos of his ex, I would 100% consider that cheating. He's facilitating a sexual relationship with her, as far as I'm concerned, because requesting, paying for, and receiving nudes from someone that he was once in love with, that feels really, really dodgy to me. And I just imagine that if this woman who he's married to had any clue that that was happening, she would be incredibly upset. And I think if the goal is to just keep it from her and that makes it okay, that doesn't make sense. The truth is, the chances are they will be discovered. And it will blow up and it will be a really hot mess. And I don't think anyone wants that.
Hey, Dan. This message is for the girl who wanted to know why her boyfriend didn't have an erection while he was going down on her. I used to have and get erections when I was a lot younger. You know, when I was a teenager and in my 20s, and I had testosterone flowing through me like crazy, and maybe it was the newness of it, I would stay hard. And as I got older, I began to do a little bit less performing and a little bit more enjoyment for myself. And I would basically enjoy her and I would be more relaxed and I would lose my erection. But, you know, that erection would come back quickly after she'd go down on me or she would touch me or something like that. Or so it's really not odd or uncommon or any sort of sign that he's not into you.
And we're going to leave it there. There are two ways to get us your questions or comments for a future episode of the Savage Lovecast. You can call us at 206-302-2064 and record your question or comment. Or you can use the Voice Memo app on your phone to record your question or comment and email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. You can also still catch the 15th Annual Hump Film Festival online. There's a few more screenings left. Go to humpfilmfest.com to get your tickets now. Now is also a really good time to get to work on your submission for the 16th Annual Hump Film Festival. Submissions are due December 4th, and along with big cash prizes, Hump shares a portion of all ticket revenues with filmmakers who make it into the festival. So go to humpfilmfest.com/submit to find out how you can make a dirty movie and make a little money. And the producers of Hump are launching a totally new and totally terrifying short film festival this October. Slay Film Fest starts on October 15th and runs through Halloween with two volumes of over 30 short horror films from all over the world. Go to slayfilmfest.com to get tickets and watch the trailer. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow Tristan Taormino on Twitter at Tristan Taormino. And be sure to check out her podcast, Sex Out Loud. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian. And me and the tech savvy at-risk youth and Nancy will all be back at you next week with another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you for downloading. Please vote. Please wear a mask.